Someone asked me before what mussar I was going to give. You just heard it. I've been thinking about two different ways of sharing this with you. One is the way I would normally do it, and the other one is, you know, yeshivish. And you want to do it yeshivish, you ask a question at the beginning, and you give a long, complicated discussion, and in the end, after a long, complicated discussion, you answer your question. I thought about it. I decided not to do it that way. I'm just going to present things straight. But now you know how to give a yeshivish talk as opposed to a regular talk. You have to start with a question, but you already know the answer, and you're going to go a long roundabout way in order to get to your answer. Hanukkah is a really strange hug for a lot of reasons. I think one of the most important, aside from the fact that, you know, the story is not included in Tanakh because it happened too late, there are almost no early sources that talk about Hanukkah. When I say early sources, like from the Tanaim, there's a Mishnah that happens to mention if somebody's walking by and you know, that camel, the flax, the straw on the back of the camel catches fire from, you know, somebody's Hanukkah candle. But there are no Mishnayot that really talk about Hanukkah, which is crazy. It's an important chag. There are no Mishnayot that talk about it. There are a few Braytot that talk about it, and even there, it's, you know, strange. The sources are strange. And we have Al-Anisim. Al-Anisim is probably one of the oldest sources that we have for Hanukkah. So this story is shrouded in lots of mystery. There are lots of discussions in machlokot about it. And I wanted to explore one piece of Hanukkah with you. And here I'm going to share with you a formulation that I heard years ago. And I don't know where I first heard it, but somebody presented Hanukkah as Sukkot de Rabbanan. Now, those of you who were in my Yirmiyahu shir probably have a clue as to what that might mean, but I'm going to talk about something completely different now. Where the idea of Sukkot Rabbanan come from? Very simple. If you take a look at Sefer HaMakabim, the Sefer HaMakabim talks about that in that first year, they came to the Mikdash. People in their masses came to the Mikdash on the 25th day of Kislev, carrying their Dalid Minim and some other, not exactly the Dalid Minim that we have, but three out of the four, they came with four Minim to celebrate Chag HaSukkot. Why? Because they had missed Sukkot that year because of the fighting. So now the Beit HaMikdash was in their hands, and the fighting was at a lull. They were able to come and celebrate Chag HaSukkot. Now, if that kind of thing would have happened in Tanakh, it would have had very bad repercussions, right? We know about somebody who took Chag HaSukkot and tried moving it a month, and he went down as classic Chotei Umachti in Tanakh, Yerav Am Ben Nevat. But somehow or another, Makabim did it, and it ended up very differently. And that's where it came to Sukkot Midrabanan, which, by the way, is an interesting theme, because now we understand why Hanukkah is 8 days. And if you want to model Hanukkah after something, most Chagim are 7 days. But Sukkot is an 8-day holiday. So Sukkot de Rabbanan, we model after the Sukkot de Oraita, and you add Shmini Atzeret at the end, you get 8 days. It also explains why we have something like a mitzvah called Hidur Mitzvah. The mitzvah of Hidur, the source of that is Sukkot. And the notion of Hidur as an essential part of the mitzvah has its origin in Sukkot. And there's only one other mitzvah where Hidur is an essential part of the mitzvah. I know today if you go to certain stores, they sell only Mahadrin foods. But that's a modern invention. Mahadrin in Shas exists only for two mitzvot. You have it for the etrog in the Dalet Minim, and you have it for the mitzvah of Hadlakat Ner Chanukah, where the Hidur is an integral part of the mitzvah. That's probably the reason why we said Hallel Shalem this morning. And we say Hallel Shalem for 8 days. The only other Chag where you say Hallel Shalem throughout the entire thing is on Sukkot. Pesach, you say Hallel Shalem on the first day. And that's it. But Hallel Shalem for the entire period is clearly, Chanukah is being modeled after Sukkot. And here's the one that should be obvious, right? You all know the famous Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. You learned it in the 3rd grade, the 4th grade, the 5th grade, the 6th grade, the 7th grade, the 8th grade, and probably every grade after that. The famous Machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. You go from 1 to 8 or 8 to 1. You go from 1 to 8, says Beit Hillel, because Ma'alin Ba'Kodesh Ve'ein Muridin. And according to Beit Shammai, you go from 8 to 1 because Keneged Parei Hechag. What does that mean, Parei Hechag?
The
Korbanot of Sukkot. Duh. Of course, Beit Shammai is going to say the Korbanot of Sukkot, because Chanukah, all of Chanukah is being modeled after Sukkot. So Chanukah is essentially a Sukkot Derabbanan. And what I want to do is I want to explore a little bit of the notion of the parallel between Chanukah and Sukkot, but I want to come at it from a slightly different angle. We don't know, and this is why I mentioned that there's very little Tannaitic material. We don't know what they celebrated for the first 200 years after Chanukah. We really don't know. The Gemara that talks about this in Masechet Shabbat says Neshana Acheret. At a different year, they established this. Was that different year 1 year later, or 20 years later, or 50 years later, or 100 years later? Here's an interesting piece of testimony from an outsider, Josephus. Josephus says that on the 25th day of Kislev, there's a celebration, and the Jews light candles. We don't know why. Is that crazy? 200 years after, 240 years after the story happens, Josephus says that people light candles, but he doesn't know the reason for it. He knows the reason for lots of other things. Josephus was very familiar with Jewish tradition. He wasn't aware that there was a mitzvah to light candles. That's crazy. Meaning, we had this entire period of time where something happened, Jews decided to celebrate. At some point, Chazal said, oh yeah, and let's formalize this. Let's turn this into a mitzvah. And once you turn it into a mitzvah, now you have to have rules. But until then, there weren't necessarily rules. It was something that emerged organically from the people. Now, here are some of the rules that Chazal decided to attach. Right? We spoke about the parallels between Chanukah and Sukkot. Now I want to talk about what are some of the things, some of the rules, and then try to understand what that means. Here's one of the rules, and you all know this because we say this every night. Ve'ein lachnu reshut lehishtamesh bahem, ela lerotam bilvad. Anybody know any other halacha where you have something, or I'll say it a little differently. When you hear that there's something that's usher to use, what comes to mind immediately? What concept comes to mind? Kachim. Kachim is usher to use. If you use kachim, it's called me'ila. It's an isur in Torah. You're not allowed to use things that are dedicated for the mikdash. You're not allowed to use them for yourself. Okay? It's kachim. Here's another one. Whatever's left over has to be burnt. Motar Hashem en Shabaner. All korbanot, in fact. So we first hear about it with the Pesach, but all korbanot, right, that are supposed to be eaten, whatever is not eaten on time, there's an isser of notar, of leaving it over, And if you do leave it over, it needs to be burnt. Whoa, this is crazy. You have all sorts of halachot about the mitzvah. Once Chazal decided to institute it as a mitzvah, that say this is very much like korbanot, or maybe instead of korbanot. Which leads me to the following suspicion. I'm not going to say conclusion, but I'll say suspicion. The minhag to light candles started at some point during those 200 and whatever years, right? And when Josephus came around, it hadn't been formalized as yet in any kind of way. And at some point after Churban HaBayit, that's when we first hear that there's a mitzvah to light candles. And now that we understand that the mitzvah to light candles carries with it echoes of korbanot, so what does that suggest then about Hanukkah candles? That? Zecher LeMikdash, or if you want to say even stronger, it's a way of taking the concept of the Mikdash, it's the celebration that we used to have for Chanukat HaMikdash, and now we don't have a Mikdash. So what do we do with Hanukkah?
We bring it
to our house. Okay? We can't celebrate the Chanukah. It doesn't make sense to celebrate the rededication of the Beit HaMikdash that no longer exists. So we're going to take this and we're going to bring this into the home. Okay? And here you have some really interesting things happening. Okay? Here's one. The formulation of the mitzvah of Chanukah is ner ish uveito. One candle per household. That's the primary mitzvah. Now, what that means is, see, it's different from Kiddush. See, when I make Kiddush at home on Friday night, every member of my family has a chiv to make Kiddush. But I can be motzi them in Kiddush. Remember, there are lots of mitzvot where one person can be motzi other people because you count as a shaliach. But ner ishuveito, you don't act as a shaliach. Ner ishuveito, the mitzvah is that one person lights per household. That's the mitzvah. And it's not so much a mitzvah on the individual to light. It's a mitzvah that says that the house has to be identified as a house that has Hanukkah candles burning in it. That's the mitzvah. Okay? So much so that if you have a building like this, let's say this were a private house, and there's one side facing out that way, and there's an entrance over there, and let's say there's an entrance over there, you actually have to light on both entrances. Because anywhere that people walk by your house, it has to be identified as a house that has the candles burning. Here's another example. A visitor comes, and he's sleeping over in your house. He can be yotzei with your candles. So later on, they say, yes, he should give some money, he should contribute. But the core mitzvah is not a mitzvah on the individual. It's a mitzvah on the home. If I'm traveling, and this has happened to me, I'm traveling, I'm not at home, the people in my house can light for me. My house is covered. If somebody else in my household lights, and I'm part of the household, even though I'm not even there, I don't hear it, I don't see it, but I can be yotzei. If I'm a guest in somebody's house, I can be yotzei if I'm considered part of that household. That's what the money is all about. The money is to say I'm part of the household. You have to have it on both doors. Even the placement, right? The ikar hadin, the placement of the candles, right? So where are the candles supposed to be placed? The opening of the house, and the way it's formulated is the mezuzah on the right side and the candles on the left side. The mezuzah marks the house as a Jewish home. And when Chazal then say that mezuzah on the right side and the candles on the left side, so what are they saying about the candles? What are they doing?
Creating a synthesis between the two.
They're marking your home as a Jewish home. When you put all this together, you end up with the following. Hanukkah is a holiday where Chazal said, we no longer have a mikdash. And we can't really celebrate Chanukat HaMikdash. But instead, we're going to celebrate the Jewish home as the mikdash. You turn your home into a mikdash. The candles are like kachim. Einanu reshut leishtamesh bahem, ela lerotam bilvad. Anything that's left over has to be burnt. The home becomes the mikdash. And this, I think, is the core concept behind Hanukkah as Chazal envisioned it. And this has lots and lots of implications. When you think about, look, you're here this year, right? But beyond this year, right? Try to imagine what that means for your home to be a mikdash. What kinds of things should be going on the other 300 and some odd days of the year that are not Hanukkah, that also identify your home as a mikdash? What makes your home a holy home? What makes your home a place where people who walk in say, this is a Jewish home? What about your home is going to tell your kids what kind of people they are and what kind of people they should be? Hanukkah talks about the symbols, what kind of symbols we have. The truth is, it goes way beyond symbols. And Hanukkah, transforming our home into a mikdash, is really about what happens day to day inside the home. And if somebody wants Divrei Musar, those are the Divrei Musar. Divrei Musar is that Hanukkah is a good reminder of what our Jewish home needs to look like for ourselves, for our families, and for all the people who walk around our home and who see our home and can look and point and identify and say, that's a home where Kedusha feels at home. Chag Sameach.